Hey, this is Miss Melis, the Bathtub Mermaid, and you are listening to Tales from the Tub. It is Wednesday, the 19th of August, 2015. This is the Dog Days of Podcasting. I am recording this in my kitchen because I am waiting for my precious silver laptop to be delivered to me. They quoted me a delivery date, a re-delivery date of August 26th, and it's only the 19th, and I'm really excited, but it shouldn't have taken as long as they quoted for a physical problem. A lot of the people in podcasting have mentioned food, and before the official conversation that Nutty and I did for her podcast, Nutty Bites, we talked about food, and I think afterwards we talked about food as well. We talked about the fact that I am absolutely in love with the basil pesto that you can buy at Costco. I've been thinking about that because this last few months I've been going back to a lot of family recipes and making the flavors of my childhood. It started because my great-aunt Molly died earlier this summer. She was 105. This was not a tragic thing. And yet at the same time, she was one of those people where we all were like, wow, I really expected her to outlive all of us. Because, I mean, 105 is pretty impressive. She was shorter than me, and I'm 5 feet tall, so that's pretty impressive, too. She was this woman who was full of style and verve and wit. She had the same Chanel haircut for her entire life. And at the time she died, she still had her name in the phone book with the original phone number from when she and her husband moved into that house in 1938, still in his name, and he died in 1975. It's a really, really retro way of living. She had this green couch that was covered in plastic for most of my childhood, went to storage, came back, still covered in plastic. The last time I saw it, they'd taken the plastic off. It was like a brand new piece of furniture, and it had gone out of style and come back into style so many times that currently it was back in style again. She is not the person I learned to cook from. I learned to cook from my grandmother and my grandfather and my mother, and all three of them, all three of them, I can count, really. All three of them are improvisational cooks. None of us measure. We measure when we bake because baking requires specific chemical reactions, but we typically don't measure when we cook. So it drives all of our friends crazy. It drove me crazy because my grandmother would give me a list of ingredients for something, but she would never tell me how much of anything. And now I'm the same way. I make things for friends all the time, and they're like, well, how do I make this if I want to make it myself? And I'm like, well, I can tell you what's in it, but I can't tell you how much because I don't measure when I cook. But lately I've been making all these family recipes. So after my great-aunt Molly died, I made rice pudding because my biggest association with her, and I know I've talked about this before, if not this year, then last year, my biggest association with her was seeing her at the diner that her part of the family owned. It was a diner called White Crystal in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. And it had the blue naga hide stools that spun. I mean, it was a classic East Coast diner, a couple of blocks from the Yacht Harbor. Had this great mix of clientele where it would be like the nice ladies who came in for coffee and cheesecake in the afternoon, and the fishermen who would go in at dawn before they went out on the fishing boats. And my mother's cousin Anthony ran it for most of my lifetime until they finally sold it like 10 or 15, maybe even longer ago, years ago. And the locals, I used to call him Moose. I mean, it was like something out of a television show, only it was real. Great Aunt Molly worked in the diner most of her adult life. She had an 8th grade education, and she was in charge of the finances, and apparently she did a really good job. But my association from childhood was going in to see her every time I came back home for a summer in New Jersey, and getting huge hugs, and they would always have rice pudding waiting for me. One of my favorite birthdays, I think it was the year I turned 9 or 10, was coming into the diner and It was late in the day, so the rice pudding was almost gone, but my cousin Anthony had put some in a ceramic bowl and covered it with tinfoil and then made a candle out of, like, twists of paper, different colored paper, that he'd colored the tips of red and orange with markers and stuck it through the tinfoil, and that was my birthday thing from him. I don't have a family recipe for rice pudding, but I have figured out a recipe that doesn't actually require custard. You have to do cinnamon, and if you put raisins in it, they have to be the golden kind, not the black kind. Trust me on this. But I can't tell you the recipe because, as I said, I don't measure when I cook, even when I'm making rice pudding. Aunt Molly wore this same perfume for her entire life. It's called Taboo. And I'm told it's actually quite disgusting, but to me, it smells like rice pudding. It smells like rice pudding so much that one of my mother's acquaintances in Mexico joined us for coffee when I met with her coffee group the last time I was there. And she walked in and I said, "That smells like rice pudding. Someone's wearing Taboo." So it's amazing how sense memory works that way. But I don't want to talk about Taboo anymore. And I really didn't mean to talk about my great Aunt Molly, although she was a really fantastic woman. I want to talk about my favorite childhood dish, which is aglio olio. In Italian, aglio is olive, is garlic, and olio is oil. I always think olive because you use olive oil for it, but it's just garlic and oil. It is the simplest possible pasta dish you can make. You boil spaghetti in salted water. You never, ever, ever put oil in spaghetti water, only salt. You boil spaghetti until it's al dente in salted water. At the same time, you saute sliced, not diced, but slivered garlic in olive oil. When the pasta is almost done, right before you drain it, you take a cup of the water and you add it to the olive oil and the garlic, and you keep stirring it until it emulsifies and takes the hard, raw garlic taste out of the sauce. Then you add just a pinch of crushed red pepper, like the kind that you get at classic pizzerias that come in little jars on the table, that. And then you add the pasta to it and you stir. And then you add parsley. Italian parsley is the best, but any parsley will work. Don't use cilantro. It's completely the wrong flavor. And then you stir it a little bit longer. And then when it's all evenly, when the pasta is completely coated with this garlicky, oily, parsley-y sauce, you serve it. And then if you really, really want to, you can throw cheese on top, but you don't have to. I have added other things to it in the past. There are times when I'll add, like if it's leftovers and I want to dress it up a little bit, I'll add Kalamata olives because the acid, salt and acid in the olives works really well with the sharpness of the pepper and the garlic. Some people add anchovies. I'm not an anchovy fan. There's a couple of recipes I've seen that add lemon juice. You don't need it. This is a dish that is supposed to take 15 minutes start to finish, and if you do it right, it really does. Being New Jersey Neapolitans, it's a Neapolitan dish. It comes from Napoli. So, and my family origins are in Caserta, which is part of the Neapolitan region. Being New Jersey Neapolitans, we of course do not pronounce it aglio e olio. We say aglio olio. And it is our family traditional dish for Christmas Eve and Easter, when times when you normally wouldn't have a heavy meal or you wouldn't have meat, because it's this quick, peasant, rustic dish, but it's delicious and it's satisfying, soul deep. I can tell you that I have seen recipes that say, use 2 cloves of garlic, use 3 cloves of garlic. I saw one that told you to use 1 clove of garlic. I think all of that's precious. It's just completely precious. I use a fistful of garlic. I use a fistful of garlic in most things that require garlic. I don't believe that if you use garlic correctly, you can ever have too much garlic in a dish. I do cheat. I buy the pre-peeled big things of garlic at Costco, and then I divide it into several really tiny zippy bags so that there's no air, so that it doesn't get icky really fast. Because I use garlic so much that I go through it quickly enough, and $5 for a vat of pre-peeled garlic is worth it to me. But you don't have to do that. That's just because we are a very garlic-intense family. So the other thing I wanted to talk about which has to do with food and cooking, is that even though I don't measure when I cook, and even though I tend to be very improvisational when I cook, oh, let's put this and this together, let's see what that does. I've started using things like nutmeg and cinnamon and chili. For a long time I didn't, but then I went back to it. My husband doesn't like it, so sometimes I don't tell him, because he thinks if there's chili in it, if cinnamon and chili, it makes him sick. But if I don't tell him, he doesn't know, and he can't taste it. I love my husband very dearly, but sometimes he has the palate of a fourth grader. He lives on orange soda. I mean, he lives on orange soda, Sunkist, because it has caffeine. I always tell him he should drink water. My mother always teases that someday he's going to preserve his own liver and I should have a backup husband planned. But I love him and he adores me and he still flirts with me after almost 21 years of marriage. So I really can't complain that he drinks orange soda, because there are things I eat, like, oh, liverwurst, that he thinks are disgusting too. But anyway, there's this book that I've had for almost a decade. It was published in 2008. It's called The Flavor Bible. It's by Karen Page and Andrew Dornenberg, and it's got these amazing, amazing photographs in it. But it's really, and it's not a cookbook, it's almost a kitchen chemistry book, because it says, like, it goes through every major kind of flavor, sweet and spicy and umami and all of those things. And it explains what spices bring out those flavors and what kill those flavors. And if something's too salty, here's all the ways you can make it taste less salty and things like that. It's a fascinating book. And if you're an improvisational cook like I am, it is probably the best book you could ever have. So, Alia Olia, The Flavor Bible, and Rice Pudding. Those are my topics of the day. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. The Bathtub Mermaid is written and produced by Melissa A. Bartell and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 International License. Music for this episode was provided by Mebio's Music Alley, a great resource for PodSafe music. Visit them at music.mebio.com. The opening song is Soap in a Bathtub by Stony. The closing song is You Can Use My Bathtub by Little Tom. The Bathtub Mermaid is produced and recorded using Boss Jock and Audacity. You can contact me by leaving a comment at the website, www.bathtubmermaid.com, by finding me on Twitter, at Melisse, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, or by sending an email to Melisse, M-E-L-Y-S-S-E, at starfleet.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, never let your bathwater get too cold. Still it shows, but you can use my bathtub. Understand, you can use my bathtub. Yes, you can.